everybody. My name is Mike Malloy, and yours isn't. Thanks for joining us. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Robert and Phyllis in Drexel Hill, PA. Their message, thanks for the show. We love Lone Wolf Malloy. Oh. Thanks a lot, Robert and Phyllis in Drexel Hill, PA. Thanks for the show. We love Lone Wolf, Lone Wolf Malloy. Thanks, folks. We appreciate it very much. So in a couple of weeks, the recall vote for Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is to be held. Greg Sargent, writing at the Washington Post, his Plumline blog, Sargent points out that the Democratic National Committee has done nothing in terms of money to support the Democratic challenger to Scott Walker. When I saw this yesterday, I just, what? Democrats in Wisconsin are furious with the National Party, and the DNC in particular, for, as Greg Sargent writes, refusing their request for a major investment in the battle to recall Scott Walker. Now, the Republican Party is putting millions into defending Walker. A top Wisconsin Democratic Party official told Greg Sargent, quote, "We are frustrated by the lack of support from the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Governors Association. Scott Walker has the full support and backing of the Republican Party and all its tentacles. We are not getting similar support," end quote. He went on to say, quote, "Considering that Scott Walker has already spent $30 million and we're still even in the polls, this is a winnable race. We can't get outspent 2-1 or 5-1. We can't get outspent 20-1. End quote. Now, according to the Wisconsin Democrat party official, he told Greg Sargent that Wisconsin Democrats had asked the DNC for $500,000 to help with his field operation. And in response, the DNC made supportive noises. Oh, good luck. Yeah, we're right behind you. Yeah, we hope. Boom, boom. The money has not been forthcoming. The recall election is June 5th. Now, Obama's political operation is providing volunteers with information on how to get involved in the recall battle and how to register to vote. Oh, that'll help. But no money in the race from Obama's political operation either. Labor unions? Well, of course, they're the ones that Scott Walker tried to and did kick around like so much dirt under his feet. They're expected to invest as much as they can in the ground game, but the Wisconsin official, Democratic Party official, says it won't be enough. He says, quote, "This idea that labor has unlimited resources is a fantasy. Our needs go well beyond that," end quote. Now, polls suggest, according to Greg Sargent, polls suggest that very few Wisconsin voters are persuaded or persuadable at this point after huge millions upon millions of dollars pro Walker ad expenditures. And the numbers have barely budged, which means that the race will likely be decided by turnout. So what the Wisconsin Democrats are asking for is money to put into a ground operation. And that's what's going to be pivotal to the outcome. Wisconsin Democrats are counting on their field operation. They have more than 40 offices to carry the day and offset Walker's ad advantage on the air, but it needs money. Now, what makes this, as Greg Sargent reports, what makes this all the more galling to Wisconsin Democrats is that if Walker retains his office, could be very bad for the National Party's prospects in November. The unnamed Wisconsin Democratic official told Greg Sargent, quote, Scott Walker has made this a national election. If he wins, he will turn his victory into a national referendum on his ideas about the middle class. It will hurt Democrats nationally. The fact that the National Democrats are sitting on their, he says, hands, I would say ass, now is so frustrating. The whole ticket stands to lose, end quote. I don't get this either. Except to say that to the National Democrats, it really doesn't matter. You know, how many times have we talked about and taken some heat for it, for suggesting, and you know, reading emails that you all have sent in, for suggesting that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are just heads and tails of the same coin. One is about 96% fascist. The other one is about 70% corporatist. And any interest in trying to restore sanity to the political system is interest that is only shared down here on the dirt level. That's where we are. We're in the dirt level. And the people with the big money who are determined to move us toward this fascist goal that has been so sought after by right-wingers in this country since forever. I mean, since forever. How many plots and plans to overthrow a president of the United States? How about when they finally iced Kennedy? I mean, come on. Roosevelt could have been murdered had the industrialists gotten their way. And as far as I know, maybe somebody has better information than I, but none of the people who plotted and planned to overthrow Roosevelt ever went to prison. They were all big-time capitalists back in the 30s. Is that right? I think that's right. If you've got any information, let me know. But I don't think anyone did. And to acknowledge that this has been going on for so long, and now, in an absolute effort to throw this rancid son of a bitch out of office, the Scott Walker. And don't forget who else comes from Wisconsin too, right? Paul Ryan. If Walker retains his seat, it's just kiss it all goodbye. And maybe it doesn't really matter. Maybe it just doesn't matter at all. Man. Democratic National Committee. Oh, no thanks. We'll sit this one out. Pretty strange. The FBI is examining potential wrongdoing surrounding J.P. Morgan Chase's $2 billion trading loss. Why? For what reason? Well, what's the FBI doing there? According to the New York Times, the investigation, which has just begun, will focus on several possible lines of inquiry. Among other things, investigators want to examine J.P. Morgan's accounting practices and public disclosures about the trades that prompted the loss. Now, what is funny about that, and I'm sure Prairie, too, would agree with this, the FBI, they're going to try to unravel derivatives and all this garbage that these gamblers now use to devour the system. FBI agents are gonna, really? Well, I'll be damned.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts.
get angry, let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Just got an email here from Linda, who runs the Mike Malloy thread at Democratic Underground. And Linda writes, from today's Greg Sargent column, DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz confirms that she'll raise money for Tom Barrett in the battle to recall Scott Walker. So BuzzFeed, where this is reported, says that DNC Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz will visit Wisconsin this month to campaign with Walker's challenger. But there's still no indication that the Democrats in Wisconsin can expect more help than that. Wisconsin Democratic Party spokesman Graham Zielinski said, "We are confident that they will be here for us," when asked if the visit meant more money, monetary support from the DNC. Well, it so it has to be reported by the Washington Post before the DNC does anything? Thanks, Linda. All right, back to this FBI story. Or I should say the inquiry into J.P. Morgan Chase. Investigators said that the inquiry was preliminary, and that it was, you know, just routine for the Justice Department to open a case after a big bank discloses a huge blunder. Cases being led out of the FBI's New York office, blah, blah, blah. No one at J.P. Morgan has been accused of wrongdoing. Hell no. And didn't Jamie Dimon get reelected and or reaffirmed or whatever at the shareholders meeting today? They love him. Hey, Jamie. Hey, keep doing it for us. Boom. Prairie 2 writes, the FBI actually does have experience unraveling crooked financial schemes. They have a bank fraud unit that's quite good, but what they appear to be doing, or what they appear to be going after, is the cover-up. Jamie Dimon may go down for making public statements as CEO back in April that nothing is wrong, but it appears that he was well aware that they were losing billions. As far as these derivatives being so complicated that no one can understand them, that is really just a talking point to allow the masters of the universe to operate unfettered by us mere mortals. The mystery about them is that anybody thinks that they're a good idea. Derivatives. Well, I damn sure. I've tried for, 2.5, 3 years to understand it, and I simply cannot. It's like doing four-dimensional calculus. It's just not going to happen. This news of the FBI investigation follows a similar acknowledgement last week that regulators at the SEC... Oh, yeah, they're going to do a great job. They had opened an inquiry into J.P. Morgan's disclosures and accounting practices. A potential avenue for the SEC to explore is whether the bank's risk controls broke down. Oh, stop it, for heaven's sake. Now, you know, the proles, that's us, we're supposed to look at that, I guess. Those of us who pay any attention to it at all, like you and me, we're supposed to look at that and go, oh, well, looks like there'll be an investigation. Well, okay. The Virginia House, they call it the House of Delegates in Virginia. They're still living in the 18th century. But the Virginia House of Delegates, I think this happened today. Yeah, they rejected the nomination to be a judge on the General District Court in Richmond, Virginia. They rejected the nomination of a prosecutor who happens to be gay, after conservative Republican lawmakers argued that if he becomes a judge, he will press an activist agenda. Sometimes I get this urge to pick up a lead pipe and start beating things. an activist agenda. Early this morning, the Virginia House voted 33-31 with 10 abstentions, goddamn cowards, against the candidacy of Tracy Thorne Begland, who was nominated for judgeship. Mr. Thorne Begland, a deputy Commonwealth attorney in Richmond, needed a majority. That's all, simple majority, the 100-member House to be confirmed. He would have been the state's first openly gay judge. But oh my God, he'll push an activist agenda! He's a former fighter pilot. He disclosed his sexual orientation when he was a naval officer about 20 years ago in a challenge to the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. He was honorably discharged after he disclosed that he is homosexual. He is raising twins with his partner. His partner is a lawyer. Conservatives argued that certain aspects of Mr. Thorne Begland's biography meant that he would not be able to be impartial if he became a judge, an assertion that those supporting Mr. Thorne Begland disputed. I guess if you're heterosexual, you can be just totally impartial, but if you're homosexual, you can't. Well, I guess if you're Jewish, you can be totally impartial, but if you're Muslim, you can't. I guess if you're black, you can be totally impartial, but if you're white, you can't. I guess if you're a man, you can be totally impartial, but if you're a woman, you can't. I guess if you own a dog, you can be totally impartial, but if you own a cat, you can't. It is 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Robert and Phyllis in Drexel Hill, PA. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Phyllis. And the message, thanks for the show. We love Lone Wolf Malloy. All right, Lone Wolf, huh? Thanks, Robert and Phyllis. We, and I mean we, appreciate that very, very much. Tracy Thorne Begland, deputy Commonwealth attorney, that's like, you know, state's prosecutor in Richmond, nominated for a judgeship, and the House voted in Virginia, the House voted 33-31. No, you can't! You're gay! With 10 abstentions. Because, you know, if he becomes a judge, then he's just going to do all kinds of gay things, you know. He's just going to be a queer activist of the highest order. I wonder what that could be in Virginia. What now, Virginia, you know, I lived in Virginia when it was illegal for a black person and a white person to marry. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't that long ago. Okay, it wasn't that long ago. So now this. This judge nominee tried to allay the concerns about whether or not he would become a queer activist in a letter to a Republican who's chairman of the House Courts and Justice Committee. Mr. Thorne Begland declined to comment on the vote, saying only that, quote, I look forward to continuing to serve the citizens of the city of Richmond and the Commonwealth of Virginia, end quote. Now, committees in the Senate and the House had approved the nomination with the support of both Democrats and Republicans. But today, 31 Republicans voted against him, while 8 voted for him. Democrats who supported him said, quote, it's a sad day for Virginians who believe in equality. That's the House Minority Whip. And Governor Bob McDonnell, a Republican, implicitly condemned the vote in a statement released by his office today, saying judicial candidates, quote, must be considered based solely on their merit, record, aptitude, and skill, end quote. No, not true, Gov. Sorry. The statement also said, quote, the governor has long made clear that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is not acceptable in state government, end quote. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Gov, why don't you initiate a law in your House of Delegates legalizing same-sex marriage where it concerns, making a contract in front of a judge, you know. Why don't you do that? Oh, wait a minute. That's what it is. The gay judge, if it ever came before his court, would vote in favor of gay marriage. Only, you know, you're not voting in favor of gay marriage. Just like Roe v. Wade was not in favor of abortion. Nobody is in favor of abortion. Roe v. Wade was about privacy. Equal protection under the law is not about gay or straight. It's about equal protection under the goddamn law. That's what it's about. What's this gay marriage stuff? If there is a constitutional assurance of equal protection under the law. Now, a lot of people in this country, that's laughable. Of course it is. Black folk been laughing at that for, well, since it was written. What? Equal protection? For us? No. Goddamn. Equal protection. Jews? Equal protection for us? How long ago was it that Jews could even get into medical school in this country? Catholics? Now, I'm not defending them. I'm just saying. Catholics? Equal protection under the law? You're kidding me. Four words. Al Smith, Jack Kennedy. And now gay folk. They're turning the barrel, right? Equal protection under the law, my ass. Any time that that has a group that was denied equal protection under the law has sought to get that, you know what has happened. Heads busted, fire hoses out, attack dogs, people in jail, brutal comments. Well, you know, if we allow black folk and white folk to get married, well, they're going to have babies, right? And then what? What are you going to call them babies? Equal protection under the law. So don't, you know, please, I hate it. I just hate it. With all the talk about gay marriage, this is not about gay marriage. It is about equal protection under the law, that people have a right. I mean, if these two people over here have a right to form a contract and call it marriage, then these two people over here have a right. The only qualification is age, and I guess you have a blood test. Unless that's changed, I don't know. Age of consent. Now it's gender of consent or something. I don't know. So, when you hear people talk about gay marriage, just look at them and sigh and say, no, dear heart, listen, it's not about gay marriage. It's not about same-sex marriage. Don't you love those terms? Gay marriage. Well, hell, I hope everybody has a gay marriage. What do you want to have? A dull, depressing marriage? Have a gay one. La, 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 la. Dancing and parties and la, 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 la. You know, whether you're man and woman or woman and woman or man and man, have a gay marriage. Ah, la, 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 la. So just look at these folks who tell you, well, I'm in favor of same-sex marriage or gay marriage. Just say, but, oh, okay, good for you. But what's that got to do with equal protection under the law? I mean, when you really get down to it, frame it the way it is. That's all I'm saying. That's you know, my one complaint with the people of support Roe v. Wade, the people who support a woman's right to privacy with her physician, is that they call it choice. Which is the perfect opening for the bumper sticker. It's not a choice, it's a life! Come on. Come on. Freedom is slavery. War is peace. What was the other one? Ignorance is strength. Is that what it was? Okay. The next chapter in the Keystone XL pipeline saga has now begun. Cue the prairie music, you know, the kind of like a bonanza music. In January, President Obama rejected the first proposal from TransCanada, the pipeline company, on grounds there are not enough time for thorough environmental review of the project, which would carry crude, nasty, filthy, dirty crap from Alberta, Canada, tar sands to export zones on the Gulf Coast. And, you know, I still see that woman dressed in black for the American Petroleum Institute. There she is, or whatever the hell it is she's shilling for. This woman who has become just like, who's the woman who's become the voice of, the public persona, the commercial persona of the insurance company. This woman is kind of like the, like Geico Gecko. This woman who shills for the American Petroleum Institute.
You mean like the progressive insurance lady?
Yeah, the progressive lady. Who is it?
Fran?
Not Fran. I don't know. Anyway, the woman who shows up in the black pantsuit and the black heels, and you just know she has a whip stuck in her waistband. You know she has a whip. You also know, just off camera, she has a box that has spurs in it. And all kinds of fun things. You know that about this woman. Okay, I know that about this woman. But she comes out and she... flow! she comes out, the American Petroleum Institute woman, and she talks about how the tar sands oil and the pipeline and all these wonderful things. It's going to millions of jobs, billions of jobs. We'll have people from all over the world coming here to work on the pipeline. It'll go on forever. And it's clean, pure oil. And it's going to go right to America. Every single goddamn thing this woman says, every single thing she says is a complete inversion of the truth. So this morning, the Times had something to say about it. I'll share it with you when we come back. I like this song. Play the song, Kathy.
Mother, should I run for president?
This ought to be Romney's campaign song, you know?
Should I trust the government?
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Robert and Phyllis in Drexel Hill, PA. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Phyllis. The message, thanks for the show. We love Lone Wolf Malloy.
Ow!
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it very, 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 very much. Keystone XL pipeline. So the Times wrote about it yesterday. Was it yesterday? On their editorial page. You see, TransCanada recently filed a new application with the State Department. And they provided alternative routes designed to avoid Nebraska's Sand Hills region. an environmentally sensitive area that is at risk from potential pipeline leaks. Well, but wait a minute. What is Keystone XL saying? Are they saying that, well, we're going to have leaks, so we'll go the other way? We're still going to have leaks, but it won't mess with your precious little sand hills. Is that what they're saying? You know, it's actual sand from when Nebraska was at the bottom of an ocean and dinosaurs roamed on the shores and Adam and Eve rode on the dinosaurs. You know, it's about 5,600 years ago. Now, of course, the reason the State Department, because they have jurisdiction over the project because the pipeline crossed the international boundary, blah, 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 blah. The State Department has to give this application a rigorous review, the Times says. No, I disagree. The State Department ought to just say, no, we're going to turn this one down. We're just not going to do this because the science indicates that this is going to be an extinction level event. Oh, come on. What are you talking about? Oh, for God's sake. What do you mean extinction level event? It's just oil, for Christ's sake. Don't you want oil there in America? Yeah, but it's not coming here. Oh, well, come on. You're splitting hairs. Did you know Obama was not really American? Now, the first time the State Department was asked to review this, they did a terrible job, of course. And the anti-Keystone XL pipeline activists, you know who they are, hundreds of them got arrested in front of the White House protesting this abomination, protesting this further gouging into places we shouldn't be gouging. You know, they shouldn't be shoving probes into women's vaginas, and they shouldn't be shoving probes into the tar sands in Alberta either. Both instances are going to get you in a lot of trouble. Now, the Times points out that it's, you know, well, I mean, it's not clear if the new routes proposed by TransCanada involve less potentially sensitive areas where damage would be extensive in case of a pipeline spill. Pipeline spill, really? Route change does not alter other basic concerns about all this. There's never been any doubt that taking this filth out of the tar sands is a dirty, energy-intensive process that damages Canada, huge swaths of Canada's forests, and, of course, produces more greenhouse gases than conventional oil extraction. But that's only the beginning of it. That's only part of it. When the stuff is refined, when it is burned, when it is shipped, it has a potential to be a tipping point event. Game over, whatever. Of course, all that stuff has just been written by those crazed environmentalists, right? What do they know? And the benefits, if any, would be minimal to the U.S. of A. Now, not that the U.S. of A has to benefit from something happening in Canada. I mean, come on, we're not that arrogant, are we? Oh, yes, we are. We are very arrogant. But what I'm trying to say is it's being presented as a benefit to the U.S. of A, which it is not. It is a murder event to the U.S. of A. That's B. A is the fact that the pipeline terminates in an export zone. In where? Galveston, Houston, somewhere in Texas. An export zone. You know what that means? No taxes! No this, no that! Why? Because it's going to be sent to China. Most of the oil, and we all know this, is for export that comes out of this filth hole that should be left alone. in Alberta. It's not for us. Now, what are the Republicans doing? They're including approval of this filth event in a new transportation bill that will force Obama to make an early decision, again, without sufficient environmental review. What do you think is going to happen, huh? What do you think is going to happen? And does it matter? We're going to open up the phone lines. If you would like to call in, voice an opinion. Unless you're a right winger. If you're a right winger, go away. Go, I don't know, go watch television. We'll be right back. Sponsored by Linda Colley, and I have to read her message. Kathy and I got this this morning. You know, it's just kind of a little overwhelming for me, but I'm going to share it with you anyway because she wrote it. Dear Mike, peace to you and yours. I want to sponsor an hour of your show because you have given me faith in the human race again, especially that part of the white race. Especially that part of the human race that is white. I was having my doubts for some time now, but listening to your show has helped to heal my heart about white people. You could have guessed by now I'm an African-American woman. I have never heard a white man speak the truth the way you do about anything, and especially your own white folks. That takes courage and an open heart. To actually hear you speak to the black experience and to white people so that they can understand what has happened and is happening to us as a people. Because our Holocaust is not yet over. I'm forever grateful to you for keeping my heart open to my fellow white human beings and that there is hope for the planet. Now, that's pretty... Linda, thank you. Well, I appreciate what you said. It's sad that it has to be that way. That, you know, somebody on a radio program rather than our neighbors, you know, or the people we hang out with. But anyway, thanks, Linda. That was so sweet. I mean, it very kind, and Kathy and I were both very moved by this when we got it this morning. Thank you so much. Linda Colley, our sponsor this hour. I don't know if I'm going to read that whole thing again all three times, but I'll read it one more time. An email from Marlis about Fukushima, and we talked about this extensively when Thursday, Friday, I don't know. Anyway, Marlis writes, Mike, I'm as concerned as you and others about the Fukushima damage and its potential for further damage to all life on this planet. We in this country have already received radioactive damage from Fukushima via the air currents. I've read that some areas of the West Coast, including my former home, Santa Cruz, have experienced elevated early childhood mortality since the disaster. The largest peril lies in the possibility of a Reactor 4 collapse. If you've seen pictures, there has already been an explosion that has rendered the building structurally unsound, and another earthquake of magnitude 6 or greater has the potential of toppling it. Reactor 4 has the newest fuel rods, and if they burn, the greatest amount of cesium would be released into the atmosphere with the potential for making at least all of Japan and possibly the entire northern hemisphere uninhabitable for at least 300 years. If you would like to have an unbiased expert analysis, I suggest you listen to Arne Gunderson, who's a nuclear engineer and knows as much as anyone about nuclear energy. He and his wife have formed a website, fairwinds.com, fairwinds.com, an energy education website which you may want to check out. I consider it to be unbiased analysis. Caution, you may need a very stiff drink afterwards. I enjoy your show, and I've been a podcast subscriber for several years since I don't watch TV. I depend on trusted websites and internet shows like yours for information. Thanks, Marlis. The website is fairwinds.com. I haven't had a chance to go there yet, but I certainly will. Okay, phone calls, 877-996-2556 is the number. Gary is in Sacramento listening on Sirius. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Mike. Glad to hear you.
Thanks. Glad to hear you.
Great. You're great. I always enjoy your show.
Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, go ahead. What, sir?
Well, I've got this issue about this gay marriage thing. I just don't understand it. It seems like anybody could buy a house with anybody and put it in both of our names. You and I could buy a house, be joint owners.
Right.
I don't understand what they're being not allowed to do. I mean, you and I could have a partnership. We could be living together, have a partnership.
Right.
And at the end of the year, split the taxes and pay those.
Right.
You could buy a house. Yeah, I could have you sign as my conservator if I was unconscious and couldn't make medical decisions for myself. I don't understand the issue. I don't know what they're losing out on. Enlighten me, please.
Well, I wish I could. But I can't, because it makes no sense to me either, or to anyone who tries to find some sensible reason in the context of this whole attitude that because of someone's sexual orientation, they shouldn't be allowed to make one specific kind of contract. Now, two gay men and two lesbian women can form a business contract. They, as you pointed out, they can form any damn contract they want, except a marriage contract. And that, to me, obviously, it has its roots in religion. Judaism, Islam, Christianity, they all are against even acknowledging gay folk, much less marriages. And you know, in some Islamic countries in Africa, or Christian countries in Africa, the idea of executing gays was included into their legal legal code, and
sure.
Until human rights advocates said, you know, this is madness. So I don't know, Gary. I wish I had an answer. It makes no sense on any level except one, and I don't call it sense, but religious bigotry.
Well, what is the state bothering with a license anyway? Shouldn't it be like either a church should marry somebody? Couldn't somebody just get a certificate from a state certificate?
I think marriage has to be sanctioned by the state. It is. Any contract is sanctioned by the state. I mean,
sure.
That's how contracts are made. You go to court, you present what you want with the contract, I present what I want with the contract, we sign, we have lawyers, and it becomes part of the legal record of the state of wherever.
It's a contract, but can't you just have a marriage certificate from either a...
My position is, if these churches don't want to marry gay folk, then don't. They don't. I mean, churches do not have the power to grant a marriage contract anyway. All they can do is go ahead and bless, if that's the right word, through their particular religion, what this marriage is. The contract has already been signed before they even go into the church or the temple or the mosque or the synagogue or whatever. It's already a done deal. So
what I'm hearing you saying is that they're not being refused any rights that anybody else has then. Is that right?
Right. That's why it is unconstitutional to deny people the right to form a contract because of their sexual orientation. What the hell? Where is that? Where does it say that in the U.S. Constitution? It says quite the contrary, that people who are citizens of the United States will have equal protection under the law, which is, right. That's not hard. I mean, people with high school educations can figure that out. Equal protection under the law. Very simple.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you enlightening me.
Okay, Gary. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling in. Take care. It's just a maddening issue. It's just an insane issue. But religions are insane. All religions. Now, if that offends you, what can I say? Go ahead and pray and go to your house of worship and jingle the bells and smell the incense or whatever you do. Sing the hymns. Listen to the preacher tell you you're doomed to burn in hell forever or wherever. And you know, unless you accept what he's telling you, blah, blah, blah. But to me, religion is madness.
This I'll tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. An institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry, and they will say it's elementary. Try to separate them. It's an illusion. Try.
Okay, well, that was fun. 21 past the hour. I don't know what that was all about, but we're back. All right, back to your calls. Bill is in Allentown, PA. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I got something in the email, in my email box today from that the Credo thing.
From what?
They were talking about, you know how the Credo...
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, they were saying that they said something about... Our governor up here, Tom Corbett, he wants to remove or take away the money for the care of the state parks.
Right.
And the only thing I can think of that he's doing that for is so that it's easier for the people to get at the Marcellus Shale gas.
Well, that may be his ulterior motive. I think what Corbett is talking about is... there's not enough money in the Pennsylvania state treasury. Harrisburg is broke. Didn't Harrisburg go into
right.
bankruptcy? The state cat.
Pretty much.
Excuse me?
Pretty much. It's basically because, you know, we went right wing in 2010. Just like
right. But I think what Corbett is saying is that rather than raise revenue by taxing the wealthy in the state of Pennsylvania, or by coming up with a transaction tax or something, rather than do that, what he is going to do is to cut not just state parks, but probably if you have the Children's Health Insurance Program there, if you have state Medicaid, education, closing or cutting back on the amount of money necessary to run the state parks is just part of it. But this is what Republicans do. This is what right wingers do. If you want to have some entertainment, Bill, you're supposed to go to church. You know, you're not supposed to go hang out in a park. I mean, what's in a park? Nature stuff, right?
Yeah.
Corbett is just like all the rest of these right-wing governors. I don't know.
I know.
All right, thanks, Bill. I appreciate you checking in. Thank you very much. Lawrence is in Michigan, listening on Sirius. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, hi, Lawrence.
Hey, Mike. You know what, brother? I got to admit, you're one of the best talk show, you know, personalities I've heard or listened to in quite some time. You know, you talk plain, you talk simple, down to earth. I don't see how nobody can understand the bare facts how you lay it out there. What I wanted to get to, Mike, is simply this. You know, I had called in your show a while back, and I was
asking. Hey, Lawrence, let me butt in. You're staticking out. I mean, on every word you're saying, there's static.
Can you hear me better now?
Let me see. Go ahead. Yeah, it sounds like it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Mike, this is what I want to get to.
Okay.
This whole gay issue, your previous caller, you hit it right on the head with him. Like, what is it that the gays aren't getting? And, Mike, tell me if I'm wrong. Please enlighten me. The gay issue cannot be equated with the Black Holocaust or the Black experience as we know it in America. Gays have been enjoying a privileged position in different societies throughout the world, throughout history. Blacks, on the other hand, are still being persecuted.
Okay, now wait. Because you're confusing a couple of issues here. Nobody who has a brain the size of a pea or bigger has ever suggested that gay folk and the Black experience are the same. Nobody.
Ooh, Mike.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold because I'm not going to have dueling voices here, Lawrence. Here's the issue. It's an issue of legal rights. If you are going to live in this country, we have a constitution that guarantees everybody that is a citizen here equal protection under the law. That means Black folk can go vote like white folk. White folk can own property like Black folk. Gay folk can get married like not gay folk. It's very simple, Lawrence. Nobody has ever, who is sane, has ever suggested that the gay experience and the Black experience are the same. Where did you hear that?
Oh, we got a brother that comes on the left, Mark Thompson, I think that's his name. Make it plain. This man, you know, you can't have an intelligent conversation with that Black man about the gay experience. I mean, you know, he's out here promoting the gay experience, and anytime any talk show person is that rude and nasty to the callers, he has a hidden agenda.
Let me. I'm going to jump in again, Lawrence, because. You know, I know Mark. I don't know him like I know my next door neighbor, but I have been on his program. I have met him in Washington, D.C. when we were both there, protesting, more right-wing fascist crap. And I hate to say it, Lawrence, but you're wrong. I don't know where you're coming up with this, but he does not do what you're accusing him of doing. He does what anyone who has sense does. And that is say, if you're a citizen of this country, and if you're not a citizen, you have rights under the Constitution. Gay, straight, Black, white, Jew, Gentile, man, woman, it makes no difference. Unless you're a bigot.
On the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Linda Colley. I'm going to read this one more time. And like I said, her message with her sponsorship was pretty moving for Kathy and me this morning when I read it. Dear Mike, peace to you and yours. I want to sponsor an hour of your show because you have given me faith in the human race again, especially that part of the human race that is white. I was having my doubts for some time now, but listening to your show has helped to heal my heart about white people. You could have guessed by now that I'm an African-American woman. I have never heard a white man speak the truth the way you do about anything, and especially your own white folks. That takes courage and an open heart. To actually hear you speak to the black experience and to white people so that they can understand what has happened and is happening to us black folks as a people, because our Holocaust is not yet over. I'm forever grateful to you for keeping my heart open to my fellow white human beings and that there is hope for the planet. Well, Linda, thank you. I mean, I don't know what to say except thank you very, very much. It was a very kind thing to say. Really. Gordon is in Oklahoma City. My man.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
What I get to hear from you. You called in once every 6 years. Okay.
That's about right, yeah. So I'm at my quota. So I'm,
how you doing?
I better call in. I've been doing great.
Good.
Yeah, I'm going to jump out of another airplane soon.
No. Oh, that's right. You did skydiving on a birthday?
No, just on a whim.
Oh, just on a whim.
Yeah, 11,000 feet.
And what was that like?
Oh, the wind was tremendous. That was the main thing I remember is the wind.
Well, what made you do this?
Oh, I've always wanted to.
Well, yeah, but okay. I bet it was really fun.
It really is, and I'm going to do it again.
Was it a tandem jump, or did you go yourself?
No, I went myself.
Ah! Good for you, Gordon.
So I survived that one, and I'm surviving the whole homophobia thing here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it must be a little weird in Oklahoma City, but it's weird all over.
Oh, yeah, it's weird all over, but we have plenty of weird to go around here, I'll tell you.
I'll bet.
One gentleman called about the legal rights on gay people, and I think I left the impression that, you know, all you can do is just maybe sign a contract and everything. There's many rights that you cannot do anything about.
Right.
For instance, Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm.
One of the partners gets injured on the job, let's say gets killed. There's no rights there
right.
for the other partner to collect anything. Accidents, non-consortium, I mean, there's about 1,400 different rights that
are denied
when they're married.
Yeah.
And many of these, like I say, you can't do anything about. For instance, I have a partner, we've been together for 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And his half of our property was put into a trust. My half, I had to buy.
Mm-hmm.
The trust says his half goes to his heirs. Well, in Oklahoma, I'm not legally an heir. There's a big surprise there.
Right, right.
I mean, it could go, you know, if he had kids or if he had, you know, it would automatically go to the brothers who put that little stipulation into his half, which is the trust.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd be stuck here having to pay off half of the property again, you know.
Right.
I mean, that kind of hits on a personal basis right there.
So what are the chances, Gordon, the Oklahoma state legislature legalizing gay marriage?
You know, eventually the Republican, the churches, and all of them, it might be, you know, a long time, but eventually they're going to say it's all their idea. They're going to, you know, be all in favor of equality.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the good news. The bad news is I'm 63 years old.
Yeah, I hear that. No, I get that completely. Well, it's good to hear from you, Gordon. Thank you very much for checking in, and I'm glad you still listen. Apparently, you do.
I don't miss the program.
Your emails have tapered off a bit. That's understandable. That's okay. But anytime you feel the urge to write, write. Okay.
Oh, I will. I may do a little follow up on the church night deal for tomorrow.
That sounds good.
Okay, Mike.
All right, Gordon. Take care. Take care, Gordon. Nice man. Remember, we met Gordon
on the first cruise.
That's right.
He gave me a beautiful necklace that I still wear.
First,
that was the cruise we took Mexico. To the Western, the Mexican Riviera.
Yeah.
Cabo and Mazatlan.
Nice man. Regarding those rights, I just got an email from Captain Mary in Memphis. And she said, I found this post in a forum today that gives the rights that gays miss out on because of being denied equal rights. And here's what it says. There are over 1,000 federal laws in which marriage status is a factor. That's what Gordon just said. Partners in same-sex couples cannot receive these important benefits, from Social Security survivor benefits to federal tax benefits to federal employee health and retirement benefits. In 34 states, it is completely legal to fire someone from their job based on sexual orientation. In 44 states, it is legal to fire a transgender person. The Family Medical Leave Act, a federal law granting 12 weeks of unpaid leave to allow someone to care for a spouse, does not apply to same-sex partners. Filing a joint return offers advantages over separate returns. Many same-sex couples lose thousands of dollars per year because they have to file separate tax returns with the IRS. Married couples can combine their personal estate tax exemptions. This means that the second spouse to die can leave property worth up to $10 million free from federal estate tax. Gay or lesbian couples do not get the portability so that the second spouse to die can leave only $5 million tax-free. The heterosexual spouses of deceased veterans are entitled to a myriad of benefits, including health care, death pensions, educational assistance, home loan guarantees, vocational training, and bereavement counseling. And it goes on and on and on. Gay folk, lesbian folk, transgender folk don't get those benefits. Now, to the guy who called me and trying to compare the Black Holocaust to the struggle for gay civil rights. I mean, what can I say? Your mind is made up, pal. I wouldn't be surprised if most of your information comes from one of those on-the-down-low preachers that you hear about all the time. We got one here in Atlanta. Great big old mega church. Yeah, amen. And then four or five handsome young black men come out and say that the preacher, Bishop Eddie Long, was, you know, doing things in the name of amen, Jesus. And at the same time, talking about, don't be gay. But I think Bishop Eddie's position was, and he had one of those 25,000 member megachurches and running the financial scams on his poor suckered parishioners. I mean, the whole thing. But he's still preaching. People still going. Yeah. But I would imagine that my caller who wanted to compare all that, you know, it's a shame, too, because in so many black churches, and I say black churches, white churches, too. I mean, come on, Malloy. But you know what I'm saying. Black churches will get especially hardcore on this particular issue in a way that you don't find in a white church. White churches just tell you, man, you're going to hell. You know, I mean, you're going to hell. It's a different approach in the black church. Now, I can understand to some degree the disinclination of black folk to have their struggle for constitutional legal rights compared to anybody else's. I understand that. And I also understand that in this country, people were not enslaved because they happened to be gay. I understand that. I get that. But that's not the issue. You see, you can take me down that path for a minute, but I'm not going to go very far because that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not the U.S. Constitution, when it guarantees equal protection under the law, is serious. If it is not, then throw the goddamn thing in the toilet. Just forget about it. Let's stop playing these head games. Let's stop pretending that we're about equal protection under the law. Let's stop the nonsense. And just go ahead and do a fascist Nazi thing or whatever. Let's go ahead and get the Jews and get the blacks and get the gay folk. Let's just go ahead and do it. Or let's not. But if we have a constitutional guarantee of equal protection under the law, then you folks who are against gay rights where it concerns forming a contract, get your head out of your own asses. Just do it.
Just look around. A thousand years to build, and now it's coming down. If this were a movie, I'd say the acting's pretty bad. Everyone's stiff. Dialogue so sad.
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Linda Colley, the woman who wrote the really kind message. I read it twice. I'd just be a little bit embarrassed to read it a third time, but thanks, Linda. Thank you very, 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 very much. Next hour, the topic is going to be about a huge pile of heavily redacted documents provided by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund on behalf of Michael Moore, yeah, him, and the National Lawyers Guild. And what those documents, even in their heavily redacted form, what they reveal is pretty spooky. In terms of, it has to do with a topic that came up last week on this program about whether or not there was federal involvement in trying to crush the Occupy movement. And I made the statement, I think I said I didn't think that that was going on, that it was all local. Well, not true. So stick around for that. Coming up after the next break. Mike is in Salt Lake City, listening on XM. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. Fair to Midland. Well, Mike, what I want to call you about was I learned two interesting things about the phony baloney and flip-flopper Mitt Romney. Today I went to a bookstore in Salt Lake City. It's called a Deseret, you know, bookstore.
Right.
All it is just a bunch of, you know, stuff for, you know, Mormon people.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a book, you know, that, you know, about Mitt Romney. It was written by two guys from the Boston Globe. And here's what that they admit right even on the jacket of the book. And I'll quote to you very briefly.
Okay.
Where staggering profits were won through leveraged buyouts that helped create jobs, but also destroyed them. And then a second thing I have in my files, a statement by Mitt Romney in the Wall Street Journal where he supports free trade. Mike, the bottom line here, when Mitt Romney says, I'm a great job creator, Mitt Romney, you're a phony baloney liar.
Well, of course he is. And even on that point, I'm sure the book gets into this, when Mitt Romney destroyed jobs and then created jobs, the jobs that were created through Bain Capital, the jobs that were created, I'm sure the pay was less. I'm sure the benefits were either less or non-existent. You know, I can do that. I can go into a company where people are making $35 an hour and fire everybody, fire 100 of them, and then hire 200 at $10 an hour. And woohoo! I just created jobs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you created jobs, but at the same time, you know, you're paying them less. See, what it is, Mike, I think we're all aware of this. You know, us free-thinking liberals, that what's happening today is a race to the very bottom dollar you have to pay your worker because of all this corporate, you know, globalism crud.
Well, it's capitalism at its finest hour. This is what the capitalists in this country have been working toward. That's why what Bill Clinton did when he signed, I realize he didn't initiate this, but he signed off on it, and so did Pappy Bush sign off on the these free trade agreements, NAFTA and GATT and all this other stuff. That was something that capitalism has been waiting for. Now, as Prairie Two has pointed out, the East India Tea Company, this is what they had. That's where globalism really, or globalization, where it really existed. And what happened in this country, it led to a revolution because of what the East India Tea Company did. So here we are. Everything is old is new again. So we've come full circle, only in a much more destructive way. So when Clinton signed off on NAFTA, that was, I mean, I can see every capitalist in the country just about probably went insane with joy and glee. Because don't forget, the one big expenditure that capitalists hate more than any other is labor. The cost of labor. The perfect situation was what we had in this country, or what white folks had in this country, well, white male landowners had in this country 225, 30 years ago, and that was slavery. If you get your labor for free, you can do just about anything. I mean, as long as you have zero labor costs, and you know when a part wears out, you just bury it. A part being one of your workers that you're not paying. You understand? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
So Mitt Romney, you know, his whole scam. Mitt Romney is the perfect capitalist. The perfect capitalist. I mean, nobody could be better than Mitt Romney. He's a liar. He's a fraud. He creates jobs after destroying jobs. And the jobs he creates pay less. They're less substantial. It destroys families. Mitt Romney, you could say with that smiley goddamn face of his that's starting to turn my stomach, Mitt Romney is the perfect capitalist for the 21st century. And that's why he has to be stopped. Obama or somebody has to defeat him so that Romney can go back to being the predatory, religious, goddamn cult fanatic that he really is. Go away, Mitt. Jesus Christ, go away. But if you want to see the perfect, perfect capitalist predator, take a look at Mitt Romney. We'll be back after the break. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. Malloy Show, Hour 3. So many government plots, so little time, huh? I got an email this morning from Sand, and he sent me an article that covers some documents that were discovered via the Freedom of Information Act. And the documents are about the crackdown on Occupy, the Occupy movement, Occupy Wall Street, the entire Occupy movement. The reason this is interesting to me, and I think this reason Stan sent it to me, is because I had either responded to or I forget the context, but I had said a couple of weeks ago that I didn't think there was any kind of a national effort to squash Occupy. Well, silly, ignorant me. And also, I'm going to get to him here in a second. Also, Sand writes, you've not mentioned the upcoming protests against NATO in Chicago, so possibly you're not aware of them. There are free buses traveling there for the massive rally and march on Sunday, May 20th. That's this Sunday. I hope you will encourage your listeners to get to, quote, police state, end quote, Chicago for this important protest against NATO and the U.S. imperialism for total spectrum dominance. We are being lied to regarding NATO and U.S. humanitarian interventions around the globe. From Sand. I haven't mentioned, except where it concerned the demonstration planned by National Nurses United. So, this Sunday in Chicago. Now, this piece was written by Anonymous. It was put on, put out on the net by Dave Lindorf. I'm sure you all know him. It's also at thiscan'tbehappening.net. And it says, a new trove of heavily redacted documents provided by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, in response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund on behalf of filmmaker Michael Moore and the National Lawyers Guild, makes it increasingly evident that there was and is a nationally coordinated campaign to disrupt and crush the Occupy movement. The new documents, which Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, PCJF, National Director Mara Verheyden-Hilliard insists, quote, are likely only a subset of responsive materials, end quote, in the possession of federal law enforcement agencies. Only, quote, scratch the surface of a mass intelligence network, including fusion centers, saturated with anti-terrorism funding that mobilizes thousands of local and federal officers and agents to investigate and monitor the social justice movement, end quote, from PCJF National Director Mara Verheyden-Hilliard. Nonetheless, blacked out and limited though they are, she says that they offer clues to the extent of the government's concern about and focus on the wave of occupations that spread across the country, beginning with last September's Occupy Wall Street action in New York City. These latest documents reveal, quote, intense involvement, end quote, by the Department of Homeland Security's so-called National Operations Center, NOC, N-O-C. In its own literature, DHS describes NOC as, quote, the primary national-level hub for domestic situational awareness, common operational picture, information fusion, information sharing, communications, and coordination pertaining to the prevention of terrorist attacks and domestic incident management. Domestic incident management. The DHS says that the NOC is, quote, the primary conduit for the White House Situation Room, end quote, and that it also, quote, facilitates information sharing and operational coordination with other federal, state, local, tribal, non-governmental operation centers and the private sector, end quote. Ooh. Hmm. You know, a better description for a fascist police state network could not be written. Now, remember that this sprawling, massive, yet totally centralized operation, what's being described as, quote, a vast, tentacled national intelligence and domestic spy network that the U.S. government operates against its own people, that this operation was in this case deployed not against some terrorist organization or even a crime mob or a drug cartel. Rather, this is being applied against a loose-knit band of protesters, all conscientiously and publicly committed to nonviolence, who were exercising their constitutionally protected rights to gather in public places and to speak out against the crimes and abuses of the corporate elite and the politicians who are bought and paid for by that elite. Now, let me interject. How do folks who support President Obama continue to do so when, once you have this information gotten on an FOIA request by Michael Moore and the National Lawyers Guild? I put myself in that group. I fluctuate back and forth between being struck by the sincerity of his speeches and his seeming, okay, I'll put quotes around sincerity, whatever, and his seeming interest in Obama's seeming interest in reclaiming the democratic ideals that the right wing has taken away and corporate America, capitalist America has taken away. I mean, I almost fall for it every time. Until, you know, about 15 minutes after the speech, it's kind of like good sex, I guess. During the moment, you're just so like, OMFG, woohoo! 15, 20 minutes later, you're kind of like, huh, well, what was that all about? Among the documents obtained by the Peace and Justice Fund, in the second batch of responses to its Freedom of Information request, is one from November 5th, 2011, a couple of months ago, from the NOC Fusion Center desk. Now, remember these acronyms. NOC is the National Operations Center, which collects at the federal level and then distributes the names and contact information of a group of Occupy protesters who were arrested during a demonstration in Dallas, Texas against Bank of America, which I don't have to tell you is one of the nation's biggest predatory capitalist lenders. None of the seven arrested was charged with any serious crime. Six were charged with using the sidewalk. But their names and contact information were widely disseminated by the Department of Homeland Security. Have I got your interest? Okay, let's continue this after the break.
Hi, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ali, and he writes, forget it, too hard to pronounce my last name. Thank you, Ali. Ah, sorry. Back to the documents posted online by David Lindorf, put together by Anonymous, documents that came in response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, Michael Moore, filmmaker, and the National Lawyers Guild, which makes it very clear, abundantly clear, that the resistance to the Occupy movement is being deeply coordinated on a federal level. Now, fusion centers, okay? How's that for a term? Fusion center. They come from the National Operations Center, but there are fusion centers which collect stuff. Well, here's what it says. Fusion centers, a post-9/11 creation, are a federally funded joint project of the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Justice Department, which are designed to share intelligence information among such federal agencies as DHS, the FBI, the CIA, and the U.S. military, as well as state and local police agencies. Well, we certainly are getting a clearer picture now, aren't we? By their nature, they are designed to circumvent legal constraints on various agencies. For example, the ban on CIA domestic spying, or the Posse Comitatus Act, which bars active military activity within the borders of the U.S. There are currently 72 fusion centers around the U.S. Jesus, Kathy, they probably have a file on you about 4 inches thick. Another group of documents shows that on November 9th, last year, 2 days after a demonstration by 1,000 Occupy activists in Chicago who were protesting social service cuts in that city, the National Operations Center Fusion Desk relayed a request from Chicago police asking other local police agencies what kind of tactics they were using against Occupy activists. They specifically requested that information be sought from police departments in New York, Oakland, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Denver, Boston, Portland, Oregon, and Seattle. All the scene of major occupation actions and of violent police repression. Now, how was this request made? It was made through the NOC Fusion Desk. Realizing that it would look bad if it assisted in such coordination overtly, higher officials in the Department of Homeland Security ordered the recall of the request, but then simply rerouted it through, quote, law enforcement channels, end quote, where presumably it would be harder for anyone to spot a federal role in the coordination of local police responses. And in response to that order, the documents show that the duty director of the NOC wrote that he would, quote, reach out, end quote, to LEO LNOs. Those are liaison officers on the floor, whatever the hell that means, to assist in all this information sharing. Now, Ms. Verhaden Hilliard explains that LEO is the FBI's nationally integrated law enforcement, intelligence, and military network. Another document shows that earlier, in advance of a planned Occupy action at the Oakland, California ports facility on November 2nd, Department of Homeland Security, quote, went so far as to keep the Pentagon's Northern Command in the intelligence loop, end quote. Now, you remember the Northern Command was put together during the Bush years, and that designates the North America as a potential combat zone and has in place, in response to that, the Northern Command, just like we have the Africa Command, the Pacific Command, the, you know, all these different commands. And I remember talking about that when it occurred, and nobody was too surprised that the military now has a designation in place for the U.S. as a military zone, not necessarily combat, but military. Now, there's some more, so stay where you are. Not a whole lot more, but some more in this synopsis put together by Anonymous and posted by Dave Lindorf thiscan'tbehappening.net. Stay with us.
Year.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ali. Forget it, too hard to pronounce. Thank you, Ali. All right, back to these documents that were obtained in response to, and this kind of, they were heavily redacted. This came through a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund on behalf of Michael Moore and the National Lawyers Guild. The documents were heavily redacted. A lot of stuff blacked out, but enough was there. And these days, or these opportunities to get this kind of information, the door on this is slowly closing. Even heavily redacted documents are going to be just a fond memory of back in the early stages of the United States becoming a corporate police state. If the word fascism is too hard for you, or it's, you can't digest it, you know, just gives you gas, okay, corporate police state, whatever. National security state, that might work better. But anyway, going back to these documents, or the synopsis put together by Anonymous and posted by Dave Lindorf, let me recap that last bit before the break. Another document shows that earlier, in advance of a planned Occupy action at the Oakland, California port facility last November 2nd, Department of Homeland Security, quote, went so far as to keep the Pentagon's Northern Command in the intelligence loop, end quote, information fed to the military commanders of the North American Command. Given the subterfuge revealed in these documents that went into trying to create the illusion that the Department of Homeland Security was and is not coordinating a national campaign of spying, disruption, and repression against Occupy activists, it is almost comical to find documents that show the Department of Homeland Security was, quote, in direct communication with the White House, end quote, to obtain advance approval of public statements by DHS officials denying any DHS involvement in anti-Occupy actions. So apparently, according to these documents obtained through Freedom of Information Act, this insanity went so far as Department of Homeland Security requesting permission from the executive branch. Would that be Mr. Obama directly or one of his hirelings? Requesting permission that DHS could say, no, DHS is involved, and we're not involved in this, of course not. The documents show that both Department of Homeland Security and one of that department's police arms, the Federal Protective Service. You didn't know DHS had its own enforcement division? Of course you did. FPS, Federal Protective Service. That both DHS and FPS were in direct contact with Portland, Oregon's police chief and mayor, discussing how to deal with protesters who were in part on federal property. The coordination, according to this, between the feds and the local police in Portland and political authorities in Portland were intense. Yet the approved statement sent to Department of Homeland Security from the White House read as follows, quote, "Any decision on how to handle specific situations are dealt with by local authorities in that location. If a protest area is located on federal property and has been deemed unsanitary or unsafe by the General Services Administration or city officials, and they make a decision to evacuate participants, the Federal Protective Service will work with those officials to develop a plan to ensure the security and safety of everyone involved," end quote. Doesn't that sound like something right out of an old Soviet police manual? Doesn't that sound a little bit like we had to burn the village down to save it out of the old American Murder the Vietnamese manual? If the federal property on which protesters have gathered has been deemed unsanitary or unsafe by the General Services Administration or city officials, and they, either the city or the feds, make a decision to remove people from that site because, you know, the feds don't want people in an unsanitary or unsafe environment. Isn't that thoughtful? In that situation, the Federal Protective Service, the police arm of DHS, will work with those officials to develop a plan to ensure the security and safety of everyone involved. Now, if that includes pepper spraying them in the eyes, macing them, beating them with batons, arresting them, dragging them, smashing them, using flashbang grenades, high-octane sound, whatever, you know, whatever is necessary to ensure the security and safety of everyone involved will be applied. And there was, comically, also a White House-approved Department of Homeland Security background statement, too. Now, typically, background statements by federal officials are supposed to be used when they want to tell a journalist the true situation, but don't want to have the statement attributed to them or their department. Having it pre-approved by the White House defeats that purpose and is simply a manipulation of the media. So a White House-approved Department of Homeland Security background statement. Now, this phony background statement included the following, which is a flat-out lie. Quote, "Department of Homeland Security is not actively coordinating with local law enforcement agencies and or city governments concerning the evictions of Occupy encampments writ large," end quote. What? But all this information, of course, is directly contradictory. That's why it is referred here to by Anonymous as a flat-out lie. No kidding! Now, tellingly, the documents also include a December 5th copy of what is referred to as the Weekly Informant. That's an intelligence report published by the Department of Homeland Security's Office for State and Local Law Enforcement. When were all these bureaus and agencies set up? Huh? This is why the attack on September 11, 2001 was so vitally important to capitalist, corporate, military, fascist America. And again, if you are one of the millions of people who still believe that those attacks occurred at just a serendipitous moment for 19 crazed Muslim hijackers who, 11 of whom were from Saudi Arabia, who decided, oh, let's go to the United States and learn how to fly great big jumbo jets and how to maneuver them into tall buildings. Ah! If you believe that, if you believe the official story, I'm sorry. I know there are a lot of people that I like and respect who do believe that. They believe it in a dismissive way. Oh, come on, Malloy, for Christ's sake. There are important things to worry about. Will you get off the conspiracy garbage about 9/11? Well, I can't. For obvious reasons. The Weekly Informant, an intelligence report published by the Department of Homeland Security's Office for State and Local Law Enforcement. The issue includes an update from the Police Executive Research Forum. Christ. Concerning the activities of the Occupy movement. The Police Executive Research Forum, or PERF, Ms. Verhaden Hilliard notes, is the group that the federal government claims organized a series of multi-city law enforcement calls to coordinate the police response to Occupy, which led immediately to the wave of police violence and the head-busting and the crackdowns and the pepper spraying and the violence. The violence perpetrated by the authorities. It was at those meetings that police were advised, among other things, to act at night, to use aggressive tactics, and to use weapons like tasers and pepper spray, and to take steps to remove journalists and cameras from the scene of crackdowns. Well, surprise, surprise, you sons of bitches. What are you going to do? Confiscate everybody's iPhone? I don't think so. Thank you, Steve Jobs. Even though you were kind of a fascist yourself, thank you for the iPhone. A conclusion to all this when we come back. So, please stay with us.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to L.A., well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to L.A., well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died.
Minutes before the hour. That's the irony in that song now. I mean, it's just, it's unintended irony. You know, and what's his name recorded it, that it's the perfect fascist anthem given what is going on. It's a heartbreaker, isn't it? This hour has been sponsored by Ali. Forget it, too hard to pronounce. Thank you, Ali. Concluding, the overall sense from these latest documents. Is that Washington and the Department of Homeland Security, along with the FBI, was the nexus of the crackdown in Oakland and every place else that it has occurred. Orchestrating it, encouraging it, and then attempting to cover its tracks. The documents, among other things, expose the massive hypocrisy of the Obama administration and the Democratic Party, which this election year have tried to co-opt and claim as their own the anti-fat cat theme of the "we are the 99% chanting occupiers, while actually acting in the interests of Bank of America and its fellow financial sector mega firms in trying to crush the Occupy movement itself. Now, if you want to, let me just give it to you now, and it's real difficult. If you don't write it down, I get emails tomorrow morning. Oh, where was that article? And I just don't see your email or whatever. This can't be happening.net. That's where you want to go if you want this yourself. And I just want to thank Sand for sending this to me. And remember, these documents reveal intense involvement by the Department of Homeland Security, so-called National Operations Center, NOC. And in its own literature, DHS describes NOC as, quote, the primary national-level hub for, among other things, domestic incident management. And remember also that Department of Homeland Security says that the National Operations Center is, quote, the primary conduit for the White House Situation Room, end quote. And that it also, quote, facilitates information sharing and operational coordination with other federal, state, local, tribal, non-governmental operation centers and the private sector. And the private sector. Isn't that fascism? Isn't that corporatism? I mean, do you get this? Is this, you know, to the people who listen to the program and, you know, agree with a lot of stuff they hear, but say, you know, Malloy, sometimes you just take it too far over the edge. You know, you're not Alex Jones. Well, you know, all that stuff about Fukushima, all that stuff about nuclear radiation, blah, 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 your crazed ideas, Malloy, about 9/11 and now this. Come on. Things are a little bit tough right now, but, look, all I can say to that is it wasn't my Freedom of Information Act that produced these documents. That's A. B, it was not me and Michael Moore and Katrina Vandenhoevel sitting around having a beer writing this stuff. So if you are inclined to send me an email, whoever you are, that says, you know, you ought to chill a little bit, man. I mean, that's really out there. Why don't you just, before you do that, why don't you just check out some of the stuff yourself? And if it is too scary, like it is to me, this is way too scary for me. You know what I'm going to do with this information? A part of me, the part that wants to stay sane, that wants to raise my daughter, that part is going to try to file this back someplace where it's not right up front. Because if I don't, I'm going to have to arm myself and go into the woods. I'm screaming. I'm sorry. So, NATO protests in Chicago this Sunday. You can check that out at natoprotest.org. natoprotest.org. Now, remember, please don't send me an email tonight or tomorrow if you listen to the podcast and say, what was that website? Let me do it again. thiscan'tbehappening.net. thiscan'tbehappening.net for the information posted there by Dave Lindorf. Or natoprotest.org for what's occurring Sunday in Chicago. Just remember, one cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. And now I think it's very clear that that applies on a local, national level also. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.